Time to join Andy Crane for this week's Cat's Whiskers.
Hi there, and welcome to the programme, and a special hello to Bethan Crawford in Anglesey in North Wales, who at this moment is doing what I consider to be the most horriblest chore in the whole world. She's written to us to tell us that she always listens to Cat's Whiskers while she's doing the washing up. Ah! Well, I hope you get it finished soon, Bethan, and thank you for listening to the programme. Timothy Davis says he listens to Cat's Whiskers in the car coming home. Coming home from where? Well, Timothy spends a lot of time, he says, flying radio-controlled gliders with his dad. His dad's built one for him, which is easy to fly, but his dad has a very complicated aerobatic one for himself, which is much more difficult to fly. He says it's very difficult to land, and he keeps having crash landings into stone walls and has to be mended. Well, I'm sure you're better than your dad at flying gliders, Timothy. Thank you for your letter. And evening also to Hannah Jane Coots, who lives in Liverpool. She tells us she has four cats. Four. And she also tells us that my brother and I have a radio program that we do for my mum on Monday mornings. We put it on tape for her. Well, that's how I started my career in broadcasting, Hannah, so who knows, in a few years' time, you could be sitting in this very chair. Tonight you can hear episode 3 of Charlotte's Web, the first part of Paul Copley's African Diary, and Marlene Marlowe continues her investigation of the Puddlethorpe Carnival coup. But whose head has Marlene discovered?
Puddlethorpe Police Central Computer, File 1, Licensed Private Detective, License Number 1, BIGTWIT. Marlowe!
Marlene Marlowe. There was no doubt about it. The round thing with a nose, two eyes and ears and a tuft of hair was a head, and it wasn't mine. In the cold black darkness, I got up and gingerly felt my way towards the back of the shop.
Aha! Got you, you great big bungling balaclava and burglar, you!
No! Let me go! Too late. My left foot landed right in the middle of the severed head's face.
Marlene! Oh, there you are! Are you all right?
Oh, dear, Auntie. I seem to have put my foot in it.
So what's new?
Oh, don't worry. It's only an old head.
Oh.
Why, Miss Marlowe, you've gone all green.
Yes, matches the colour of a balaclava, doesn't it?
And then I noticed. The smashed head hadn't spilt blood and brains, but hundreds of polystyrene chips.
It was only a model head, Miss Marlowe. I used them to display fancy dress wigs and hats. I'm McTweed, by the way. Hamish McTweed.
Oh, I'm Maud. Aunt Maud.
And I'm Marlene Marlowe, Puddlethorpe's most intrepid...
Yes, yes, that's enough of all that, Marlene. If you don't mind me asking, Hamish, where are your fancy dress hats and costumes?
Stolen. Every one. I had hundreds in here, all ready for various contestants in the Puddlethorpe Carnival Fancy Dress Parade. Even the Carnival Queen's gown has been taken. It's too bad. Sticker Rock's sweet shop next door is the same. Not a thing left.
It's all part of the Puddlethorpe Carnival coup, of course. First the carnival floats at Mad Mike's garage are damaged, then the fancy dress costumes are stolen.
But why O'Rourke's stock of sweets?
That's a sticky one.
And why should anyone want to hijack the carnival in the first place?
We'll know that once we found the villainous perpetrator of these vicious crimes.
Pardon?
The baddie, Marlene.
Oh.
Wait a moment.
We waited a moment. Then we waited another moment.
Look! A clue! An appointment card!
A dentist's appointment card!
Is it? How can you tell?
What does it say the time of the appointment is?
2:30. 2:30! 2:30! Stainless Stephen, 1934. You're right.
Find out who had a dentist's appointment at that time and we've found the villain! Come along, Marlene! To the dentist! Good afternoon. I wonder if you can help us.
Drilling, is it you want? Or polishing. You must have a very painful tooth, miss.
No, I haven't.
Anyone who wears a balaclava in midsummer must be suffering. I'll get you into the dentist's surgery straight away. Who would you prefer, Mr. Black or Mr. Decker?
Ah! Oh, no!
There's nothing wrong with her teeth. They're just a bit talkative, that's all.
Talkative?
Yes, can't you hear them chattering?
I'm
She's Marlene Marlowe, private detective. Now, if you could tell us who this appointment card belongs to, you would help us to collar a villainous perpetrator of vicious crimes.
I'll just check my appointment book for you. Ah, yes. 2:30. A Mr. Ed Banger.
Ed Banger. The name struck a chord.
Ed Banger! The notorious Puddlethorpe gangster!
I knew Edwin Banger well. He ran an evil gang of thugs together with his brother Ted and his cousin Monty Mash. The dreaded Bangers and Mash gang.
Mr. Banger usually comes in...
A dress?
No, an anorak and trainers.
I meant, where does he live?
Oh... Number 6B, the belfry, top of the church tower, Puddlethorpe.
That rings a bell.
By the time we reached the old churchyard, dusk was beginning to fall. We opened the door to the church tower and tiptoed up the belfry steps.
Auntie, can you hear what I can hear?
You mean the creepy music?
Yes.
We reached the belfry door and eased it open.
You know what creepy music means, Auntie, don't you?
What?
It means we're going to come face to face with a really evil villain.
Ah, Miss Marlowe and the old lady. So pleased you found us. You know my mind, that Barry Bone Crusher, Bates.
I hate private detectives, don't I, boss?
You eat private detectives is the correct grammar, Bone Crusher.
Yeah.
Miss Marlowe, no doubt you're wondering why I slashed all the tyres on the folk lorries and stole all the fancy dress costumes and the sweets.
Well, we are particularly puzzled by the sweet shop robbery. Why steal all those sweets?
Try asking Cheryl Simpkins, the carnival queen. Or should I say, ex-carnival queen?
You'll never stop the carnival!
Well, of course I won't. The carnival will go ahead. But the only entries in the best decorated float contest will be my lorries. And the only entries in the fancy dress parade will be me and my gang. Every single prize will be mine. Mine!
Yeah. Sorry, boss.
Not if we have anything to do with it, you won't.
But you won't have anything to do with it, Miss Marlowe. Tie them to the clappers of the bells, Bone Crusher.
Oh, boss.
Help!
Miss Marlowe, the bell ringers arrive for their practice in 15 minutes. As soon as they pull on the rope, you will hit the side of the bell. And when they let go, your aunt will hit the other side of the bell. So that after a couple of minutes, you'll be going like the clappers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, boss.
Goodbye, Miss Marlowe. I can see that my little plan is going to be a resounding success.
It was a desperate situation. Aunt Maud and I were strapped around the bell clapper with no visible means of escape. All I had on me was a tube of suntan lotion, and all Aunt Maud had on her was, well, her set of false teeth. It looked from where I was hanging as if Marlene Marlowe, private detective, was soon going to end up a goner.
So how do you think Marlene and Aunt Maud will get out of that situation? Well, you can find out, of course, next week. Now, the results of the Kitty Purwell competition, the Crump Conundrum. Who stole Professor Crump's plans? Well, the answer you were looking for was Elsie the Tea Lady. The clues that gave her away, Elsie took the professor his donut and she'd put a drug in it to make him sleep. The professor's calculator said 31573. Now, if you punch those numbers into your calculator and turn it upside down, it says Elsie. She also said at the time she was phoning her sister, but the phones had been out of order for a week. And she went to get her umbrella before she went home, but there was a heat wave, so why did she need the brolly? to sneak out the plans, that's why. Well done if you got all the clues. The detective kits are going to Kevin Williams of Newport, Christopher Lunny, who lives in Norwich, and Katie Toms from Newquay in Cornwall. Congratulations to all three of you. Many of the people you hear on Cat's Whiskers do lots of other exciting things as well. For instance, the actor Paul Copley, who read the Stanley Bagshaw stories for us, has toured Africa, performing some of Shakespeare's plays. Now, while he was there, he kept a fascinating Cat's Whiskers diary for us, recording some of his African adventures. Dear Cat's Whiskers, May the 7th, and still in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. I'm supposed to be in Khartoum tonight, but because of a massive dust storm called a haboob in northern Sudan, the flight was delayed 24 hours. Decided to have a last look at Addis, and what a hugely eventful and musical day it's been. It's dusk now. There's chanting and singing coming from the Coptic church, and beautiful long-tailed yellow-breasted birds singing and catching flies in the wispy trees outside the hotel window. Driving down the steep winding road from the first Christian church in Africa, in the hills above Addis near Entoto, we met barefoot children carrying water pots and laundry on their heads, driving a herd of donkeys, which out of town are used for transporting everything and everybody. The people are very poor, and the kids were ragged, but smiling, cheerful and healthy-looking, must be the mountain air. Down in the city we saw much less fortunate children, begging in the street, dressed in rags. This is very distressing, and I gave them what I could. In the Makato area, the biggest market in Africa, I was bombarded with the colours of fabrics for sale, glittering wedding dresses, woven patterned mats and wall hangings, and there was a smell of spices, bright orange and deep brown in the sun, a clatter of pots, braying of donkeys, hooting of taxi horns, and the chatter of people, brightly dressed, many in ordinary Western clothes, but often carrying their wares and purchases on their heads in a very stately fashion. I ate ingera, the national food, its thin, grey, spongy bread rolled up in wads. Then I came across a street musician playing a masinko. It's a kind of boxy violin, played vertically with the sound box balanced on the leathery little man's bony knee.
Music instruments. As you saw, it has a string. It seems simply violin.
Is the gentleman a musician?
Yes, yes, he's a professional musician in our. We do have the traditional orchestra here, which is organized by traditional music instruments. Which has four, five, or six strings. I mean, made from what do you call it? Horse hair.
No,
Mister. Oh,
yeah. It's not much. We don't.
Can you thank him very much for us? Yeah. But I was a
May the 8th. I finally made it to Khartoum, although we landed in a kind of yellow fog, the last of the haboob. And the heat at midday was like standing behind a hot jet engine blasting dust at you. There were sand drifts in the streets. I was glad to get to the hotel and look out at the glittering River Nile through the window of the cool lounge bar, which of course only serves soft drinks because Sudan has quite strict Muslim laws. Tonight I was invited to a party and met James Bull and his Shuluk band from southern Sudan, where the people are very tall, very black and very handsome. No amplifiers or electric guitars, just shell and bottle top shakers, hide drums and the Shuluk tambour, a bowl-shaped drum with strings.
My name is called James Bull.
Hello, James.
Is it the James Bull Band?
Yes, James Bull Band.
What was the last song that you sang? What was that called and what was it about?
Yes, this song is called by the love, that called lover, what I have for loving, for the young And after that, there are songs for the country also. We can call about our places called Upper Nile forever. But now I will take our tomb and I will sing it on my own without girls.
As you know, Sudan is an amalgamation of more than 400 ethnic groups. So we have the we are very rich in our musical culture. So now this ensemble is from the south, from the Shuluk tribe. And as you know, this instrument, which is called the tom, it is one of the ritual instruments, and they used when the inauguration of the crown or the king. The rest of the Shuluk, they used to, really, it is a court instrument. So in the far history, they used to make it to entertain the rest of the Shuluk, I mean the king of the Shuluk. They love their country.
The Shuluk.
They think it is the green land and all the rivers, and they hope very soon to come back home. This is the meaning of the song. Yeah.
Very tired, but excited and looking forward to exploring Khartoum and meeting more Sudanese people who are famed for their hospitality and friendliness, and seeing the point where the White Nile meets the Blue Nile. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And you can hear more from Paul's Cat's Whiskers diary next week. If it's your birthday this week, I'm sure you're looking forward to the birthday list. I know I am. Africa seems like a good word, so we'll go with that. A-F-R-I-C-A. Swiss Club members celebrating a birthday this week are Thomas Palmer, Elizabeth Taylor, Catherine Dumay and Laura Spark. Rosemary Ashley, Sarah Gibbs, Thomas Laxton, Daniel Bernstein, Angela Matthew and Stephen Clark, Nicola Brixey and Catherine Cecil. Happy birthday also to Nikki Hennigan, Jessica Waterworth, John Langelt, Megan Turner, Beth Lane Ryan, Daniel Box, Darren Taylor and Laura Hale. Mustn't forget Zoe Goodwin, Catherine McCauley, Christopher Evans, Marcus Old, Claire Summers, Philip Myers, Daniel Cullen and Guy Davey. Happy birthday also to Hilary Tyso, Hugh Southgate, Helen Muirvang, Katie Fraser, Mark Powell, Martin Kay, Jane and Sarah Dowden, Julia Harrison, Alice Griffey, Julian Aldridge, Lucrezia Goddy, Michael Everett and Mark Sims. Jason Lee's celebrating this week, so is Laura Whitby, Erica Davies, Jennifer Bowden, James Oliver, James Willis, Rebecca Turner. And finally, Laura Jenkins, Aubrey Daniels, Victoria Price, David Haig, Ian Burt, Richard Glover, Sophie Pickering and Daniel Pattenden. Happy birthday to all of you from all of us. Birthday list done then. Time to push the Perlitzer to find out who's won the t-shirts. One, four, seven, eight, eight, three. 147883. That's the membership number of Christopher Evans. And Christopher, you're celebrating your 11th birthday tomorrow, aren't you? May the 28th. So a very happy birthday to you. We will send you a Cat's Whiskers t-shirt just as soon as possible. You share your birthday with Kylie Minogue and Roland Gift of the Fine Young Cannibals. And also celebrating this week, Jason Donovan, Cilla Black, and the tennis player Pat Cash. Now on Cat's Whiskers, time for episode 3 of Charlotte's Web.
As the days went by, Wilbur liked Charlotte more and more. And as the days went by, Wilbur grew and grew. One afternoon, the oldest sheep paid a call on Wilbur.
"Hello," she said. "Seems to me you're putting on weight." "I don't like to spread bad news," said the sheep. "But they're fattening you up because they're going to kill you."
"They're going to do what?" shrieked Wilbur.
"Kill you. Turn you into smoked bacon and ham," continued the sheep. "Almost all young pigs get murdered by the farmer as soon as the really cold weather sets in."
"Save me! Oh, somebody save me!" screamed Wilbur. "I don't want to die!" "Be quiet, Wilbur," said Charlotte. "I can't!" cried Wilbur, racing up and down. "I don't want to be killed. I want to stay alive right here with all my friends." "You shall not die," said Charlotte briskly.
"Who's going to save me?" cried Wilbur.
"I am," said Charlotte.
"How?"
asked Wilbur. "That remains to be seen. But I'm going to save you, and I want you to quiet down immediately. Stop your crying. I can't stand hysterics." A few days later, Fern and Wilbur were watching as Charlotte busily made repairs to her web.
"I could spin a web if I tried," said Wilbur, boasting. "I've just never tried."
"Let's see you do it," said Charlotte. Fern chuckled softly.
"Okay," replied Wilbur. "You teach me, and I'll spin one. How do I start?"
"Well," said Charlotte, smiling, "climb to the highest place you can get to, make an attachment with your spinnerets, hurl yourself into space, and let out the drag line as you go down."
"What I need is a piece of string,"
said Wilbur cheerfully, and he walked out into his yard. "You there, Templeton?" he called. The rat poked his head out from under the trough. "Got a little piece of string I could borrow?" asked Wilbur.
"Yeah, sure, replied Templeton, who saved string. "No trouble at all."
He crept down into his hole, pushed the rotten goose egg out of the way, and returned with a piece of dirty string. Wilbur examined it.
"That's just the thing," he said. "Tie one end to my tail, will you, Templeton?"
Templeton did so, and Wilbur climbed to the top of the manure pile.
"Everybody watch!" he cried, and he threw himself into the air head first. The string trailed behind him, but as he had neglected to fasten the other end to anything, it didn't really do any good, and Wilbur landed with a thump. Charlotte laughed so hard her web began to sway.
"You can't spin a web, Wilbur." "But you don't need a web. Zuckerman supplies you with 3 big meals a day."
Wilbur sighed. "I guess I was just trying to show off," he said. "I'm getting sleepy, Charlotte. You carry on mending your web, and I'll just lie here and watch you. It's a lovely evening."
But as he lay there, he remembered what the old sheep had told him, and he began to tremble with fear.
"Charlotte," he said softly.
"Yes, Wilbur."
"Were you serious when you promised you would keep them from killing me?"
"I was never more serious in my life."
"Well, how are you going to save me?" asked Wilbur. Well, said Charlotte vaguely, I don't really know. I'm working on a plan. That's wonderful, said Wilbur. Have you got very far with it? Is it coming along pretty well? Oh, it's coming along all right, said Charlotte lightly. It's still in the early stages, but I'm working on it. I'd be only too glad to help in any way I can, said Wilbur. Well, replied Charlotte, you must build yourself up. Plenty of sleep, chew your food thoroughly and eat it all up, keep fit, and don't worry. That's the way you can help. Understand? Yes, I understand, said Wilbur. Go to sleep, then, said Charlotte. Sleep is important. Wilbur closed his eyes. Good night, Charlotte, said Wilbur. Good night, Wilbur. Day after day, Charlotte waited for an idea to come to her. Finally, one morning, why, how perfectly simple, she said to herself. The way to save Wilbur's life is to play a trick on Zuckerman. If I can fool a fly, I can surely fool a man. That morning, Avery Arable wandered into Zuckerman's kitchen, followed by Fern. Avery carried a live frog in his hand. Look at my frog, said Avery, placing the frog on the draining board. Take that thing out of here, said Mrs. Zuckerman. The children ran out to the pig pen. Wilbur heard them coming and got up. Avery noticed the spider's web, and coming closer, he saw Charlotte. Hey, look at that big spider, he said. It's tremendous. Leave it alone, commanded Fern. You've got a frog, isn't that enough? That's a fine spider, and I'm going to capture it, said Avery, and picked up a stick. You stop it, Avery, cried Fern. Avery put one leg over the fence of the pig pen. He was just about to raise his stick to knock Charlotte off when he lost his balance. He swayed and toppled and landed on the edge of Wilbur's trough. The trough tipped up and then came down with a slap. The bad egg was right underneath. There was a dull explosion as the egg broke, and then the air was filled with a horrible smell. What a stink! Let's get out of here, yelled Avery. Holding their noses, the children ran toward the house. Charlotte felt greatly relieved to see Avery go. It had been a narrow escape. When Lurvy brought Wilbur's supper, he found the broken egg and buried it. The air cleared, and the barn smelt good again. Evening came, and the shadows lengthened. Charlotte was thinking. After a while, she descended to the center of her web and began to cut some of her lines. She tore out quite a section, leaving an open space in the middle. Then she started weaving something to take the place of the thread she had removed. At midnight, when Templeton got back from a visit to the dump, the spider was still at work.
Charlotte's Web will continue next week, along with the second part of Paul Copley's African diary called Whirling Dervishes. Marlene Marlowe will continue to investigate the Puddleswap Carnival coup, and I hope you will continue to listen. Until next Sunday, just after 7 on Radio 4, have a good week. Bye-bye.
The Cat's Whiskers address is BBC PO Box 40, Manchester M60 1FR. Cat's Whiskers was presented by Andy Crane. Marlene Marlowe investigates the carnival coup was written by Roy Apps. Those taking part were Anne Rosenfeld, Peter Wheeler, Danielle Allen and John Bull. Kit Hollerbach read Charlotte's Web by E.B. White, adapted by Mick Greenway. And the programme was produced in Manchester by Mary Callum-Kerrion and Eve Draper. Radio 4, now at 7:30.